The opinions expressed in the following podcast are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide education and entertainment about the financial industry and the stock market. Enjoy.
On this episode of Pennies Going in Raw, we discuss catalyst in a slow swing market, the market's dip on Monday, and the bounce it's getting.
Find out life's this game of pennies.
Oh, you guys know we only have a 40% runner. Hello? 40% right is a f***ing killing.
We've been compliant for too long. It's time we go to war.
I don't have a Roth.
Q knows so much about the market that his brain doesn't have enough room for grammar.
Hey, who told me about IDEX? It's going up a shit ton now.
Rob, 4%, baby.
No way.
4%.
You asked the exact same question with two words different.
It's like, f*** man, I just got dick whipped for like 20%, and now that f***er's up like 50.
I bet Warren Buffett never did that.
I'm just making this voice memo to call out unusual whales to a fight.
The pennies we need are everywhere around us.
Pennies, pennies,
pennies. Going in raw.
Featuring Dan, the Idiot Dips,
and Hugh Henny.
Produced by Vinny
and Christian.
Let's go, baby.
Today's episode of Pennies Going in Raw is brought to you by Benzinga. Benzinga is our absolute favorite resource to use to trade with. We use it for charts and news and scanners. Look, guys, we use it for everything except for buying and selling stocks. I mean, that's all there is to it. And if you're not using Benzinga Pro, which you can get for 2 weeks free at pro.benzinga.com. That's pro.benzinga.com. You should at least be checking out their YouTube channel every single day, youtube.com/Benzinga. They have Hot Stocks Luke's and a just plethora of fantastic guests, from me and Hugh to Mia Khalifa to Ripster to CEOs of companies to CEOs of Webull. They have it all, guys. Make sure you check it out. That's youtube.com/Benzinga. Welcome back to another episode of Pennies Going in Raw. Today is Wednesday, July the 28th. And we saw on Monday, you know, there are articles coming out about a new mask mandate recommended or maybe required for non-vaccinated people. And we saw a pretty big dip. Not exactly in the market as a whole, but as a lot of the swing plays and a lot of the mid caps and small caps, like we do usually see, there's a lot of people overreacting like crazy or just making sure their capital is safe. Seeing a good bit of bounces in the past couple of days, but what did you think about Monday and how did it play out for you?
Yeah, I think it's really important that we always have to remind ourselves, you know, nobody ever likes seeing red. And in fact, there's a few studies out there that claim that people actually feel stronger about losing money than they do about winning or being profitable, even if the difference is a big difference in between the amount. So, you know, that basically that what they're saying is that like someone that lost $500 feels way stronger than about the 2000 that they made. And I mean, there's something to be said about that. You know, if we look at 2008, there's a lot of econ people that say that the real catalyst behind what we saw, that big drawdowns at the market, was, you know, it did obviously have something to do with the housing market, but it was because everybody was trying to sell and it came down to a simple supply and demand that, you know, when you have so many people trying to get out of positions, that it just brings the market down lower. So there is something to be said about the emotion side of trading. And, you know, someone that I like to look at a lot is Simon, okay? The Renaissance CEO, or actually now he's retired.
The one from American Idol.
Yeah, dude, like $24 billion.
Simon
who
Cowell,
knew?
Right.
Yeah. Who knew American Idol, man, was so profitable? So So the real reason that he's one of the most successful hedge fund managers of all time, and one of the reasons that he was so successful was because he would study not just how earnings and fundamental things of the market would affect the market, but how people would react to certain catalysts of the market. So for instance, he would collect so much data that he would even collect data about how, you know, like the Chinese, how when the Chinese were going through a tsunami, how it would affect the American markets, and he would collect data on that. And I mean, obviously, he found that there was not much correlation. But my point is that he was thinking outside the box inside the 70s and the 80s, and thinking deeper than just, do they have a profitable quarter or not profitable quarter?
Is he still alive?
Yeah. So I think he graduated.
I wonder
what
he thinks about AMC and GameStop.
Oh, I'm sure him and George Soros are usually pretty outspoken. He is the richest mathematician ever. I'm a big Simon fan. He got his PhD at 23. The dude is just a next level genius. He's been really interesting to study. But my point is that he, which in the 80s was crazy. People were calling him crazy because he was looking at other factors than, you know, earnings reports and economic data. You know, and how he was able to take that data and actually use it and not, you know, have analysis paralysis, meaning that, you know, if he did find a correlation, between like the string cheese shortage in China and the Bulgarian holidays, you know, like let's just say that those two correlated, you know, so he would not use analysis paralysis, but he would take all this data inside the 70s and the 80s and figure out, you know, a way to, you know, use a quant. And that's incredible to me. And that's where I really started to look at the market differently. And that's what I think we're seeing now is that, you know, on those big red days, because there's so many retailers inside the market, those big red days are so much worse on the overall market. SPY will only be down 1%, but Amazon will be down 2.5%. And so I think that emotional factor and that psychological retail has been coming in more and more because of the last 16 months and because of COVID.
Yeah. No, I mean, one of the things like regarding what you were saying earlier is even if you look up like the reasoning behind like Black Friday, I mean, I'll have like a few things that could have caused it, but they were just like overall, it was just enough people being like, okay, fuck this, you know, we're like, we're not really sure what caused this exactly.
Yeah.
But but as opposed to like in March, it was super obvious. Like we're okay. Everyone pack your bags up, go home, no work.
Exactly. You know, so. No, exactly. And so that's why I really think that SPY has been on a tear still. I mean, SPY is like on pace for 480 by the end of the year, which is insane because I was trading it in 250s like a year ago, year and a half ago, which is just mind blowing. But that's why I think that, you know, a lot of people, what you see is that SPY sees a little bit of red and a little bit of flush, and all of a sudden it feels like everything else just just flushes like 10 times harder. And I mean, those can create really good opportunities. And the other thing is that we talked about it, but that 50-day moving average for SPY has held throughout this entire massive bull run. And a lot of people ask, like, how do you know about SPY and stuff? That's by far, like right now, that's a big buy zone. Like that's, there's conviction there. If we start to flush that area, so let's just say 1 week we close below that, that's when we can start to say, okay, you know, maybe it's time to look at and reevaluate.
Yeah, so you're still kind of playing all of this off of SPY playing the moving average or riding it?
Yeah, right now. Well, so like I said, is that as long as from a catalyst standpoint, and what I mean by that is that the Fed's printing money, interest rates are still low, as long as that doesn't change, then yeah, I'm buying on the 50-day because the 50-day, and maybe I'll tweet it out later, is just continuously seeing a beautiful bounce at that spot. So as long as, you know, fundamentally catalyst, doesn't change, I'll be a buyer on the 50-day.
What do you think about kind of not only the similarities of this and, like, you know, us waiting for more lockdown news and shit last year, because, like, it always just seemed like we were waiting for some bad COVID news. Obviously, it can't be nearly as bad as it was last year, or knock on wood. But, you know, it seems like, you know, going into the weekend and then you get that Monday dip due to the weekend before having, like, COVID news. You know, there was all these extra cases and then mask and, oh, hey, you know, there's some places potentially locking down again. And then that Monday, there seems to be all the past 3 days come out and SPY has that, you know, crazy dip. Do you think one day there's going to be a one where it drops a little further than we expect, or more than just like a healthy dip?
Yeah. Yeah. As we were talking about, was that it seems that the overall market flushes more than SPY does when SPY is a little bit red. And so that being said, I mean, SPY really hasn't seen, you know, a drawdown like the rest of the, I mean, I don't remember last time that we had like a 3% down day, red day. I can't remember at this point. And so I think that, yeah, I think that there, that I think it'd be healthy actually to have one of those days where SPY just flushes hard. Like I'm talking 3, maybe 3.5%. And I think that that'll create really good opportunities because again, we're inside this market right now where it's just every dip is still buyable. Maybe not for the small cap side, but for the large caps. I mean, you look at Microsoft. Microsoft's like up 100%, 150% since last year. You know, I mean, Amazon. Amazon's, you know, if it breaks its 3,700 level, it'll be at 4,000 by Thanksgiving, if not sooner. And so we've been inside this like, hey, every opportunity has been a buy. And so I think that we need one of those moments where the dip buyers need to have some kind of conviction. Because right now it doesn't take any conviction. You know, I mean, SPY, last week we were calling for, you know, I mean, you turn on the TV and it doesn't matter if it was financial news or not. You know, everybody was calling for the great crash. And then 2 days later, we were at all-time highs. And so it's like one of those things where like dip buyers are comfortable, which is buying, and they haven't really been tested in a long time. And so I think we need one of those days where it's like, okay, Tuesday, the dip is bought. Wednesday, we have a little bit of a green retractment. And then Thursday's a big flush. You know, something yeah. along that I think would be healthy.
Yeah. And just to correct myself from earlier, I know I said Monday dip and then it kind of rebounded, but it's actually Tuesday. Yep. Yeah, it was Tuesday this week, mainly because of the mask stuff coming out. But no, I mean, it'll be interesting to see all that play out. And one other thing that happened, I think it was Monday afternoon, was all the big Amazon or all the big earnings reports. And, you know, Bitcoin was rising up a lot on that because they thought they were going to accept Bitcoin and then they said they wouldn't. But the dip kind of got eaten up as well, you know? I don't know if it's back over 40 yet, but, you know, it's definitely looking decent, you know?
Yeah, so Bitcoin, so we're recording this 10 a.m. on Wednesday, and it's just under 40K. And the thing is that 40K needs to become the new line in the sand. So we broke up above it, and we kind of came back down below it. What we need is like a pretty good blast through that, and I think that if we do that, then Bitcoin will create a new line in the sand or a new support. And the thing is that I actually think that, and this might be a little far-fetched, but I think it's better when companies stay out of Bitcoin. And why I say that is because, and it brings me back to the guest that we had on, Chebs. Am I saying his name right?
Cheds.
Yeah, Cheds was talking about something, and I never really had thought about it that way until he said it. But he said the more that the whales dump their Bitcoins and the more that it's spread around, the more it becomes decentralized, which is the whole point of Bitcoin. And that was kind of like the light bulb that went off inside my head that was like, okay, like, you know what, that makes sense to me. That makes more sense to me. So I actually think it's better if, you know, it's fine if companies accept Bitcoin, but I don't think it should be one of those things where like they have like 20% of their balance sheet in Bitcoin. I think that that's in fact, I think that's a mistake because it's just too volatile. You know, like it's just too volatile. You know, if you have let's just say that Amazon had, you know, $100 billion in Bitcoin. Bitcoin goes down 50%. What? So now the company just loses $50 billion. For Amazon, that's not a big deal. But I mean, for a company like that's not as cash flow heavy, and you know, maybe isn't as cash flush, doesn't have the loyalty program. If they have Bitcoin on their balance sheet because they're accepting it, and Bitcoin flushes 50%, I mean, some of these companies could potentially be insolvent.
Yeah. Fuck up their earnings. Wouldn't it fuck up their earnings reports?
Huge. I mean, not only would it fuck up their earnings reports, I mean, you could get into one of those situations where, you know, they're insolvent, which means that, you know, they would go from, you know, they would be showing, let's just say, like $10 million on their balance sheet. And then all of a sudden, if they're showing $7 million, you know, that's one of those things where, you know, maybe they can't pay their liabilities. So then they're taking a bridge loan. But then let's just say that they have a recall on their cars, you know, and then, you know, now all of a sudden the company's bankrupt. And all of that happened because Bitcoin flushed. If Bitcoin didn't flush, they wouldn't have to take a bridge loan. They wouldn't, you know what I mean? It's a domino effect. So for me, it's Amazon and Tesla and Apple, fine. You go ahead and have Bitcoin on your balance sheet. That's fine. You can have as much Bitcoin as you want. But for these mid-cap companies and the smaller cap companies, it can actually be something that I mean, you can really get yourself into hot water if we saw something like that 60K retractment.
Yeah. And then it's like, it'd also be kind of crazy because you'd have, if it went up 50% in 1 month or in one quarter, and then the next quarter it just stays stagnant. You're like, damn, what happened to all the money you guys are raising?
Exactly. And guidance would become next to impossible. Like, could you imagine these analysts that get paid to like give guidance? I mean, so now not only do you have to give guidance on the company.
It's up 20% in one day and they're like, you should just sell it and buy it back when it dips tomorrow.
Yeah, so now companies are going to actively trade Bitcoin, and then the analysts are not only going to give guidance on revenue, profit, earnings per share, but they're
like
also
how good they trade their Bitcoin.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what I mean. Is that like, so and then I mean that won't. I mean, I really think that is, I mean, that would be quite a day if I ever saw that. But so from my perspective, I think it's better to keep the Fortune 500s out of Bitcoin. Let it become a consumer thing. You know, if there's a world where you can pay in Bitcoin, but maybe it converts and it's not sitting on your balance sheet, I could see that. That's something that I think should interest Fortune 500s. In a world where you keep it on your balance sheet, I don't know, because I also don't think like what board is going to sit there? I mean, let's think about, most boards are probably made of older, you know, people who think more traditionally, or maybe they don't, but they probably think more traditionally. So could you imagine them thinking that like, hey, I'm going to pay for this $50,000 car in Bitcoin, but there's a chance that in 6 weeks, that $50,000 worth can be worth $25,000. I don't think most shareholder boards would approve that.
Bill, that was bickering about Bitcoin with Dan and Hugh. But moving on to something we may know a little more about, is why catalysts aren't really working in this swing in this market for swings, and also what the hell can you do about it? So, you know, I think, you know, one of the main things is you see the catalyst coming and they're all hard sell the news, or, you know, just small pops and sell the news. You're not getting quite those pre-market nutty boys off of news. So, why exactly is that happening? Just bad market conditions for it?
So I actually had this realization while I was on this podcast. It's LX. I was getting interviewed by LXG podcast host Michael, and we were talking about it, and it kind of came into my head that, and this is something that I guess we've talked about, but you know, what I thought was important to bring up at this point is that these small caps have gone so far in 16 months that even though they've pulled back 50% from their highs, they're still up 500%. Like they're still up 500%. They're still up a stupid amount of money. So my issue with most of this stuff is that, you know, something when like I had played Rumble, and Rumble was at like Rumble was like a no-brainer, you know, curling bouncer, like the fundamentals made sense, like the chart made sense. It was perfect. And the reason that, you know, it's those are so few and far between this year is because everything went 1,000%. So even if they pulled back 70%, they're still up 300%. So the issue with that is not now you say, okay, well, great. Congrats to, you know, shareholders. Yeah, that's true. But what ends up happening is that if you have a catalyst, let's just take OCGN, for example, okay? If you have a catalyst for OCGN, I know people that were holding OCGN for 3 years from now, okay? Now, let's just say that we get even, or let's even say that they were holding something for a year from out now, okay? Now, if we get to that year out, I mean, everybody's expecting this catalyst to be approved. So it's already baked in. And again, it's up three, even if it's down 50%, it's still up massively on the year. So what ends up happening is that if the catalyst doesn't get approved, then, I mean, we're seeing these massive drops. We're seeing these massive drops. And if it is approved, half the time, these people are expecting, you know, a massive boost when in reality, everybody's waiting.
That already happened.
Yeah, everybody's waiting for the same thing. So right now, for most things, it feels like a lose-lose situation. Because if you're one of the million people waiting for something and it comes and it doesn't immediately fly, then you have all these people that are just trying to get out, pushing it down. And on the flip side, if you're like me and you like, you know, bottom trading things that where the fundamentals make sense, it's difficult because nothing makes sense up here. You know, like I can't physically, like I can't look at something that has a catalyst and nothing's trading at where it should be. Nothing's trading at fair value, which because most of the time my philosophy is that I want to get in when the catalyst and the fundamentals aren't baked in, so that when it does come, there's a natural progression inside the stock. But if it's already trading at that level, it really feels like a lose-lose. And that's kind of was like my, I felt it was really important to talk about because you have to be so picky right now. And that's why we are feeling that downward pressure inside the small caps, because we should be feeling it because they're not trading at where they should be.
So you're saying we can't really play these small caps with catalyst for the catalyst until the catalyst is unbaked from it. But how do you wait until these things that are still up 300, 400% from where it was a good buy, you just have to wait until it dips another 70%?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely really good plays out there, for sure. No doubt, really good plays out there. But we have to be super, like, we have to be so specific about our criteria because everything is trading up higher. And what I mean by that is that everything needs to be looked at with a fine tooth comb, and it needs to be one of those like take profits fast. It can't be one of those like trying to hit home runs. You can play a run up to something, just understand that it's going to be like a 7% run up, not a 70% run up. What I think is, and this used to be the, pre-COVID, before COVID happened, what used to happen was that companies would drop massive offerings, dilute the stock, then there would be reverse splits. The stock would, you know, get killed on those two things. And then that would present an opportunity to people like me who are trying to play bottom bouncers if I could find a catalyst that I liked. And because of COVID, these companies aren't having to dilute anything crazy because the stocks are up 1,000%. So instead of dropping 10 million shares, they're only dropping a million. And that's no big deal to the float. So I think that once we get back into that cycle of we do the dilution, then we do the reverse split, and then, you know, everything gets killed on that, you know, that's, and we're starting to see more reverse splits, but until we start to see like, you know, maybe three or four in a day, you know, and like it really becomes like a thing again, you know, like a thing, that's where, when I'll really see the value. But right now it's just about being super specific. Doesn't mean that there's not plays out there. It just means that we have to be, you know, we have to go through everything with a fine tooth comb, and we have to understand that, you know, that we that the risk is higher because of COVID. You know, what goes up must come down. When I think about the market, I think about what goes up must come down, especially into the small cap world when they shouldn't be trading here. And also, too much of a good thing is not a good thing. And so when everything's up 1,000%, yeah, it's great for those that year or that 6 to 8 months, but then you're paying for it on the back end because, again, everything's not trading it where it should be.
Okay. Well, for the people that are still trying to swing, but, you know, clearly they can't do the catalyst swing anymore. What is the best way to swing right now? Like, obviously there's ones like Wish that are going around. Like, what is the point of that? Just low valued or undervalued stock, or, you know, why is that the new style of swing while catalysts aren't working?
No, I definitely think that undervalued is definitely one way to go. And that's because I think undervalued inside a emerging market sector. And so I'll use weed, for example. Okay, I think that weed is going to give us a great opportunity the more that these bills push through the House and the Senate. As they start to talk about them, weed will naturally get bid up. And when it is time to go and vote, even though we could be an entire year away from that, the more buzz around the sector, the better it is for the companies. And even though these companies, I mean, like, listen, TLRY, SNDL, they're trash companies from a fundamental standpoint. Like, a fundamental standpoint, you really can't get worse. They dilute a ton. They make no money. Their management are, I don't want to call them interesting, but, they know how to play the game, if you will. But that being said, is that they give great opportunities to trade, and they're really smooth traders when they want to be. So I think something like that, to where, the sector, for instance, weed, is going to fundamentally change. And what I mean by that is that, if weed is legalized, or let's just say that's completely federally decriminalized, or something along the lines of like the news that came out today about the states that legalized marijuana protecting them. As these bills start to make their way through, that's just going to increase the valuation of these companies because it's getting safer as a company to sell marijuana and to sell cannabis. So I think that that's going to be where the best value is. Same thing with the electric vehicles, sector. If Biden starts to buy a massive amount of fleets for the federal government, or they start giving tax breaks for all Americans who buy electric vehicles, then that could, again, that's a fundamental, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's just, obviously some of the EV companies are going to run farther than the others, but that gives really good risk to reward, because instead of the company fundamentally increasing their valuation, it's the entire sector. So it's one of those like tide lifts all the boats kind of thing.
Moving on to some more of the undervalued ones, kind of like Wish. You're seeing it today, around 980, even on Tuesday when everything else was dipping, it only seemed to drop damn near like half a percent or two when everything else was down about 10 to 15. It seemed like it had hit that bottom, started accumulating around 890, that load zone that's been there. And, now it seems to be bouncing hard off of it. Are we in the reversal zone for it?
Yeah, I mean, we're right on. I think it was Trend Spider Jake. Jake from Trend Spider had posted a chart last night on Wish. And I mean, it was right on that breakout zone. And that was last night on Tuesday. And today is Wednesday. And it's up 3%. So you can see that it seems like it just catapulted through that resistance, that downward trend. And so if it holds, right now it's at 960. If it holds up here, that's really good for the longevity. We broke that downtrend, and when we broke that downtrend, we broke it with volume and conviction on a day where SPY is flat. It's not, if SPY was up like a percent or two, then it's like, okay, like SPY might have had a thing to do with that, but this broke with conviction. Buyers stepped in to break that downward resistance. So as long long as, you know, throughout the rest of the day, it's only about an hour into the market open. But as long as we don't see any kind of crazy, you know, drawdown and we end, you know, let's call it like near flat, that's a really good sign from a chart perspective. Now, the other thing that we're seeing, and this comes more to the psychology of what we talked about earlier with SPY, that when we talked about when SPY is down 1%, it feels like the rest of the market's down 5%. What we're seeing with Wish is that it seems like those retail, that retail crowdness that we talked about, that we talked about so much, is gone. And what I mean by that is that, like, on those really, as you said, when Wish was only down a little bit, when the rest of the market was down a great deal. And that, what that tells me is that the retail that's currently in it is not that emotional retail trying to make a quick $1 million. It's the retail that understands that conviction precedes everything, and conviction is what's going to make this stock, if it does run, is going to make it a big winner. So like I said, we broke the downtrend. Right now, first hour into the market, it looks great. We broke it with conviction. And also, it's telling me that, you know, we pulled back so much that it seems that the people that bought at 13 sold at 9, and now they're now they're probably kicking themselves. But it seems like those emotional retail traders are out of Wish for the time being.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you see it with most of these calls, like especially ones with Zach. Just sometimes they take a while for the emotional guys to get out. They'll have that first big run, and a lot of the people that just took it for a 30, 40% profit, they sell, you know. Yeah. It dips real low, and then all the emotional ones get out, and they'll have like a downtrend for a couple weeks. If I could foreshadow like how to play those perfectly, I'd be so much richer.
Dude, yeah, I mean, that's really the thing, is that like it's kind of been one of those things where like I used to take size up front last year. You know, I mean, I would take it because everything was booming. And then this year, it feels like you have to be so much more technical, and it has to be one of those things of like, you know, where your first buy is like 1% of the position that you want. And I mean, it could go down like 30% before even showing any kind of relief. And I mean, that's kind of what we saw with Wish from 15. And I mean, still got a long way to go to get back there, but it's trading so much smoother. And the fact that it broke this downtrend, well, for now, or it looks like it's about to break the downtrend on the daily, is really nice to see.
Yeah, it's always, you know, it does feel like it's trading less heavy, and not just heavy as in like it's hard to move, but like heavy as in like if a heavy object in water sinking. so, you know, we got a long way to go to 15, a little longer to 69, but, you know, we'll get there eventually. We haven't mentioned this on the podcast yet, but we are going to the University of Nevada, Reno on September the 8th for our first ever live Pennies Going in Raw experience. We have an after party and stuff after. There is now a Reno chat and Atlas where you can kind of go to and see.
There is?
Yeah, it's under miscellaneous chat. I reached out to PJ.
Stop
for it.
Hang on a minute.
So, you know, hopefully you can find out who else in there is going and start up some conversations. We've gotten reached out by so many people. All your favorite FinTwit furus are going to be there. You know.
Yeah, it's going to be a really fun time. And we're going to have more details to come. We're going to have more details to come within the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, for sure. We're going to have a lot more details coming out. And also, I'm moving.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, moving to Houston. Moving date's late August. Big shout out to Austin's Couch Potatoes. Really fucking helping me out with my furniture. Delivering it and stuff. Literal lifesaver. That's Austin's Couch Potatoes. And I'm also getting hooked up at the apartment complex. It's going to be awesome. And I'll let you guys know more about it. So all of my new Houston friends, we can go eat barbecue and wear cowboy hats and cowboy boots. And I act like this is going to be like so much more country than Alabama, but Alabama's far worse. I've been to Houston many, many times, and I'm always like, whoa, big city. You got anything else, you?
No. I'm like I said, I'm excited for Reno. You know, we gave a donation. The Reno's great. They actually, we started talking about this Christmas Eve of last year, and it's finally come to fruition. We're really excited. Reno is, you know, UNR is a great school, and we're just we're grateful for them for letting us crash their party.
Yeah, there were definitely some things in the way that took forever. You know, our podcast name is Penny's Going in Raw. Most schools may not want that to talk to their inducting freshman class. So, you know, there's always something that will prevent you from achieving your goals and, you know, what really interferes with your happiness. So you got to check out BetterHelp.com/PGIR, the sponsor of today's episodes. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. Connect in a safe and private online environment. It's very convenient. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. Think telehealth, but for, you know, professional counseling. Send a message to your counselor at any time. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone session, all without ever having to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if need be. So I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at BetterHelp.com/PGIR. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp.com/PGIR.